Welcome to the podcast. My name is Jamie Knight, and I'm a realtor with Real Broker here in Cajun Country, Lafayette, Louisiana. The goal of this podcast is to provide massive value by bringing insider access to our area's top agents and find out how they've been able to achieve massive success in their business. My hope is that you take a few things away from their experiences to grow your own business. My guest today is fellow real agent Lana Swallow. Lana has been nicknamed Queen of the North because of her production in the northern part of the parish. She was just featured on the cover of Real Producers magazine. Welcome to the podcast, Lana.
Thanks, Jamie. Thanks for having me. I am really honored to be here.
Awesome. I'm so excited that we get to sit down and hang out and kind of hear your story on the podcast. So I guess let's start there. Let's start with how you got into the real estate business. What did you do before that? And let's go there.
Okay. So first of all, I am from a little town north, Ville Platte.
Okay.
I was raised in a used car salesman family, so I kind of have the sales genes genetically. I didn't go into sales until 2012, but originally I started out as a legal secretary and paralegal for over 37 years. In 2012, I decided I wanted to take vacations and not pay for them for 2 years.
Right.
So I told my husband, I'm going to go and sell a couple of houses a year and take nice vacations. And he was like, sure, fine. So that started out really great. And then by the next year, production was so high and the calls were coming in so quickly, and I was having a hard time balancing both companies. So I decided I needed to do one or the other. And with my husband's support, I stepped out and went full time at the end of 2013 into real estate.
Nice. The first couple of years were a little bit of a struggle, and first couple of years probably didn't pay you as well.
Right. So we used to pass by the brokerage and my husband would say, I paid for you to go work there. but I was dual career. So I wasn't closing a massive amount of homes. And by the first year, full time, I made my yearly salary in 3 months.
Nice.
Yeah, that was pretty eye-opening for me.
Nice.
That was what solidified my decision was the right decision.
Nice. So you quickly kind of leveled up and whatnot. So talk to us a little bit about what propelled you to kind of continue to level up your business every year. What were the things that you were doing, the relationships that you were building? What about those early days kind of propelled you to where you are now?
So I have to give a ton of credit to my former coworkers in the legal profession. It's a quick burnout rate. So I shifted firms probably every 3 to 5 years. You know, I say 5 years was probably my max anywhere, just because of the burnout. But in that time, I made such great friends and built good relationships. The attorneys all had a lot of respect for me. They appreciated me. Between the attorneys and the coworkers, they were sending me so much work.
Nice.
That, you know, eventually it got to where I couldn't keep up. And then, of course, being from a small town, my small town connections were sending me tons of work. So it was just a natural progression of, I want to service my clients at a higher level. I can't do everything. At one point, I was doing everything from log boxes, signs, everything. I had like 50 listings. I had like 15 pendings maybe, and I was trying to build a house.
Wow.
And it was insane. And I was covering anywhere from New Iberia to Bunky.
Gotcha. So for people who don't know where that's at, that's probably about an hour and a half distance between the two of those.
At least. Yeah. New Iberia is probably over an hour and 15, 20 minutes from me. So I was trying to be everywhere, everything. So I took one of the paralegals that I was working with. I helped her get through school and paid her fees. And so she was my backup for me. She still is doing paralegal work. I'm trying to get her out, but she loves it, and she's fixing to retire one day soon. So, and then my older son came in, so I saw the leverage that was allowed by that, and it was just a natural progression to start building a team.
Gotcha. So you built a team there, and what does that team mindset look like? What role do you play in the team, and kind of tell us a little bit about that team structure?
Okay, so I kind of run a different team. So I am hands-on. I am primarily the main listing agent, although my team are welcome anytime to list. We have a full-time transaction coordinator who is absolutely amazing. Leonat's been with me over 5 years.
Nice.
She's handled as many as 48 pendings at one time by herself.
Nice.
Doesn't miss a deadline. I have a listing specialist who assists me with all my listings. Then I just hired an assistant, and I have a little part-time kind of receptionist, care bear for my clients.
Okay, cool. Because I hear people talk about having care managers.
Right.
Like, what does that role look like?
So she is just learning. She's a new agent. Well, she's not a new agent yet. She just finished her course, so she's going to become an agent. But it's helping me stay in contact with my clients. It's helping me do pop-bys, do my Christmas cards, things like that. Just the grunt work behind it, I believe. And then she does the delivery on a lot of things when we deliver things to certain offices. She'll do that. She's kind of a receptionist. She greets people when they come in. We don't have a whole lot of walk-ins, but we do have some.
Gotcha. Okay. Awesome. So what are you doing with the sphere and, you know, trying to stay in touch? You talked about the sphere and talking about the different people who you had done previous business with. How are you staying in touch with that sphere of people?
So I'm probably the world's worst for that, honestly. But I built my business on my friends and Facebook. So Facebook had really just come of age when I began. And I used it to the highest level.
Okay.
I stay in touch with most of my sphere through Facebook. Messages, birthday wishes. I follow them. I follow their families. I like to get involved with seeing how their families progress. I mean, I have some that I'm on the third generation selling homes to, because that's how I've stayed connected mostly. Some people I don't see. I mean, I may not go to Ville Platte, but 4 times a year. So a lot of my friends I don't see from there, but we see each other on Facebook. And then we'll run into each other, you know, at Walmart or at a restaurant or something like that. So that's probably my primary method of staying in touch with everybody. And they reciprocate.
Gotcha. Cool. Yeah, definitely. Social media is definitely a high use tool for sure. And I know you're not afraid to get on the phones, right?
No, not at all.
So what does that look like with your past clients in regards to talking to them on the phones?
So I tell all my clients when I actually meet them, I give them my personal cell phone and tell them to call me for anything.
Gotcha.
I will always pick up the phone and I will always call people. I try to connect with a lot of my past clients in other ways too. You know, we do the pop-bys, or I'll stop by and you know, grab them for a cup of coffee or do something with them. I think it's really important to, especially when they have a life event, pick up the phone. Congratulations, I'm so proud of Susie for graduating, or where's she going to college? You know, that type of stuff.
Yeah, so you're using the social media to kind of trigger that little,
Absolutely. Okay,
now I need to call them and say, hey, how y'all doing?
Yeah,
what's going on?
Because I feel kind of weird, like not talking to somebody for a year, and then you just pick up the phone and then it's like, oh, she's calling me to sell me something.
Right.
So yeah, that Facebook or whatever you use is kind of a warm connection. And then you can say, oh, I saw on Facebook your brother got married. That's wonderful. Where are they going to live? You know, and just have a conversation. My main thing is relationships with people. I pride myself on my relationships with all of my clients way over money.
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%. You have to totally put the relationship side of it first. And they can feel that when you
Absolutely.
Do. Because had a conversation about why people in our community and clients and buyers and sellers like dealing with top producers. And I was like, I was basically having the same conversation this morning. And I was saying, hey, why do people in our community like to work with top producers? And I think the main reason, really kind of subconsciously, that they like dealing with top producers is that at its core, we don't need the money.
Right.
Don't need that money. And you can feel when a realtor's like, hey, I got to make that mortgage payment next month.
Right.
And man, I sure hope that buyer buys that house and they make that bad decision.
You can feel the atmosphere. And that is like one of the first things I train my team. Don't ever let me catch you going after a paycheck.
Yeah.
Go after the relationship. The money comes.
Yeah.
Build that relationship, because I don't want to, coming from a sales family, I hate a salesy person.
Yeah.
Like, I will walk in a furniture store and walk out if a salesman is at my neck. I don't like salesy people. People know what they want to some degree. I like someone who can advise me. If I go in to buy a computer, I will say, I need this, this, and this, but I don't know what I need. And they'll go, okay, you need this. And I think that's great. And that's kind of what we do. You know, I'm not calling like, you want to buy a house, you want to buy a house, you want to buy a house. But they come to me and I'm like, let's talk about your house. Let's see what you need. And just kind of delve into their lives. And people say, well, how do you know where they work? Because I asked.
Yeah, you asked the right questions.
How do you know they have children? Because I asked. I want to know where their kids want to go to school. I want to know how far the husband's going to have to drive to go to work. Things like that. What does the wife like to do? If she likes to shop, we don't want to stick her out 20 miles out of town.
Right.
Things like that. I mean, I think building those rapports with people, and honestly, Jamie, in 13 years, I've never had a person I couldn't connect with.
Yeah.
There's always a connection if you look for it.
Yeah. And asking the right questions, like you said, you know, opens up the opportunity to build those deep connections by you understanding what's important to them in the sales process or the buy process. And I love that, you know, because I was encouraging an agent this morning, literally this morning, about finding those genuine connections that you make with people and finding out really truly what's important to them of why they're selling, why they're buying. And then that way you can speak to it. We can speak about 20,000 other things that is not important to them in the sales process until you find that one thing and you're like, hey, the real reason I'm buying or selling is because I got this dog and the yard is not big enough for this dog.
Right.
So it's like, you just got to find the true reason.
And I tell people all the time, especially when I work with buyers, I'm like, look, I'm going to show you a couple of houses and by then I'm going to know what you want more than you do. Because I'm listening and I'm observing and I'm walking through with them and I'm paying attention to them. And I hear the comments, you know, this kitchen's too small. Okay, click.
Right.
That's a cook. Well, do you cook? You love to cook? Great.
Yeah, why is this kitchen too small?
Right. You know, Let's look at some great kitchens.
Is it you don't like the island?
Right.
Or you, what is it about the kitchen?
Absolutely. And within one or two showings, I've got it down pat. And they're like, wow, I didn't even think about looking at this house. But it's listening to your people instead of talking. It's building that connection. I mean, I've built connections with people that if you ever saw us together, you'd be like, how are they friends? Right?
That's funny.
But there's always a commonality, always a connection. If you really want to connect with people, it's not hard.
Yeah, because people want what they want, you know, and we're in the career of finding out what they truly want, not
Absolutely.
Just like what we want, you know? And I think that maybe that's a little bit of the disconnect from some of these agents who are just trying to make their mortgage payment next month is they want that more than...
Let me tell you a piece of advice my husband gave me. When I first started, it was like I couldn't close a deal. You know, I'd go and I couldn't close a deal. And I'd say, oh, this house is junk or whatever. And he said, you need to quit telling them what you like about the house and start listening to them.
Yeah, that's good advice.
And I was like, wow. And look, I've sold houses that I was like, nobody's going to want this house. And they love it. And 5 years later, they love it. And they've built this beautiful home. So, you know, we can't input what we think. It is what they want.
I think that's really good advice. Because I do think a lot of agents tend to insert their opinion.
Absolutely.
In the showing or the buying process. And that opinion is their opinion, and it's unwelcomed in most cases. And like you said, it doesn't glorify the client at all.
No.
And yeah, and it's unwelcomed too. It's
right.
Like it doesn't do you any favors.
And if you really get to know these people, they might be the polar opposite of you. You know, I have this
great
little couple, and
they hate all the white walls.
Yeah, and this house was kind of a wonky floor plan, and it, you know, had a room with no windows, and I'm like, man, what are y'all going to do with this thing, you know? And they have made a sound studio. That little windowless room is where their little girls read. I mean, it is the prettiest house. I mean, it's just keep your opinions to yourself. And you know, we talk about that with inspectors. Like, tell us what's wrong, but don't give us your personal opinion.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Talk about what's wrong with the house. Don't tell them not to buy the house, because that's the best way for us to never call that inspector ever again. Because we don't need your opinion, right? They have their opinion on the house.
We need your professional inspection with the results, but not your personal opinion.
Yeah, yeah. I love that.
And it's the same with us.
Yeah, for sure. So you work your tail off. So let's get there. Let's go there too, because you are a workaholic. You're right. Let's talk about your drive, how you operate. Let's talk about that for a minute.
Okay. So the first thing is, I've always kind of been a workaholic, no matter what job I've had. I have this innate desire to be better than I was yesterday. I am a very big competitor, but I compete against myself. So I put pressure on myself every day. Most days I am at my desk for 7 a.m. A lot of days I do not take lunch. Some days I do. But when I get to work, I work. I am not surfing social media. This is my job. And if I don't do my job well, then my employees do not get paid. So the more I work, the more I put in, of course, the more I get out. And my clients know that. My clients have a lot of respect for me, and they tell me, you're the hardest working realtor we've ever been around. And I'm proud of that. I mean, to some degree, you know, I do need to step back sometimes, and I'm getting better because my staff is so amazing. But I just feel like that is my business. And if I don't drive that business, who's going to drive it?
Yeah.
You know, who's going to drive it when my clients are calling and I'm not in, or I'm always gone, or they can't ever reach me? They're going to start moving. They're going to move to someone who is working hard. And I love what I do. I mean, I could probably work 24/7.
I love that. Because I think part of the problem with the realtors right now in 2024 are people who are considering leaving the business or not continuing as a realtor, is they just haven't put in enough work. If you put in 40 hours a week, this is the most rewarding career that anyone can possibly have in the history of the world. This is the upside of a 40-hour week as a realtor is just amazing.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about that. Like, people will say, I'm slow, and they'll go off and they'll go on vacation or they'll go do something. When I'm slow, I'm doing proactive work. I'm calling my sphere. I'm communicating with them. I am preparing note cards, or I am drumming up business. I'm working on my listings. I'm working on presentations. I'm working on my business.
Yeah. Yeah. You hear that a lot, is, you know, working on your business instead of in your business. So, you know, definitely during the slow times, do that.
Yeah. I mean, we get so busy, we don't have time a lot of times to be proactive. You know, I'm reevaluating my listings. Do they, you know, I'm running CMAs. Do they need a price drop? Where are they on the market? Sending reports to my clients. This is all stuff that on a normal day, we don't have time to do.
Right.
But if things are a little slow, then do those things. You always have work. I mean, you have at least 40 hours of work every week.
Yeah. Oh, there's no doubt. Yeah. But I think what happens is people aren't great managers of themselves. They don't show up for themselves every week.
Correct.
Because, right, like if you had an 8-to-5 job, you would have to show up 8-to-5
right.
for somebody else to make 10% of the money you could possibly make in real estate.
Absolutely.
But
absolutely.
If you showed up for yourself
yeah.
in real estate.
And just the idea. So for me, it's not all about money, but being a woman in business, like we hit our ceilings really low. And to know that I can make as much money as I want to make. And I tell my team that there's plenty of money out there to be made. Just go make it.
Yeah.
Go do the work to make it, because it's unlimited. We could have 1,000 more realtors in our area and we'd still all be making money.
Yeah. And you'd still be at the top.
Absolutely.
Because you have the work ethic. Because if you added another 1,000 realtors, I think the top would still be the top.
It's always, isn't it, the 20% do 80% of the work? I think that's the analogy, is that 20%
yeah.
of the realtors do 80% of the volume. And if you look at these companies and you run their rundown list, most of these people are averaging $8,000 a year. I mean, that's not a job. Go work at McDonald's and make you $30,000 a year.
Right.
That's not a job. If you're making $8,000 a year, you're not a realtor.
Right.
You know, I mean, I can understand your first year maybe, But after that, you should be up and running and being able to make a great living.
Yeah, absolutely. And far succeed any, you know, 9-to-5 job right. that you would have.
Right.
You know, so yeah, the natural progression is a first year struggle, second right. year struggle, maybe a little bit, starting to figure it out.
Yeah, you do. And it's mostly like a financial struggle because, you know, a lot of agents, they get a $4,000 or $5,000 check and they run out and buy a Louis Vuitton bag, you know. And
right.
My first big check, I bought 4 signs.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But you know, because we put back into our business. I mean, I don't pull a lot out of my business. I put back into my business.
Absolutely. So talk to us a little bit about that too. So what is there a certain percentage that you put back in the business? How are you allocating that?
So, you know, I don't do numbers, Jamie. I tell Jamie I'm really bad at numbers. Thankfully, I have a great CPA and a great bookkeeper. What I do is I pay my bills and I take a few dollars and the rest goes back into my business.
Gotcha.
Like
okay.
if it's either in bonuses to my staff
nice.
Or it's perks from my team. It may be signs. Signs are a huge part of my cost because I carry so many listings. So
right.
signs run me a lot of money, but there's always something in my business that needs to be run. You know, we maintain a building. I had to buy another building to add more space last year. So for me, I pay my bills. I have spending money and I'm fine. The rest can go back into my business or into, and I'll take some out sometimes and do investments. I have several rentals that, you know, if I've had a great quarter or whatever, I'll pull money and then go buy a rental.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Cool. Because yeah, that's a lot to manage. I mean, 100 listings at any time. You told me you carried around 100 listings at any given time. That's a lot of listings.
It is. I think the most we've ever carried was right at 150.
Wow.
At one time. But you know, we bounce around 100, 120. Now some of them are land listings, you know, so, but I have a listing specialist. She helps manage those. My job is more getting the business.
Gotcha.
Bringing the business in. And that's kind of how I am evolving. So I've stepped away from a lot of the buyer stuff, except former clients, close friends, kids of close friends.
Right.
You know, a really big personal connection that I feel like I would be the best to serve them. Otherwise, I match them with someone on my team who I think would like really align with their wants, their needs, and their areas.
Nice. Yeah, I actually like that a lot. I was in a conference yesterday, and the guy said that he's never taken any deals from start to finish. I was kind of blown away by that. I was like, really? He's never taken a deal all the way to close. But I mean, hey, if that's that way he set his business up. But I mean, like, you have to get to that point to have the staff and the everything else. And it's a natural progression of doing those things.
Now,
so
I'm really hands-on though. I really am. And I train my team. They have to do their deals from start to finish when they start with me.
Right.
Because Leah doesn't work on Saturday and Sunday. Brandy's not working on Saturday and Sunday. I want you to know how to prepare an addendum. I want you to know, you know, coming from the legal background, I'm really a stickler about paperwork.
Right.
And compliance and things like that.
Gotcha. Let's talk a little bit about the small town, because you've been able to achieve a massive amount of success in a small town, but also in a lower price point volume wise. So you've been able to not only be in the top whatever it is, 10, or I hadn't looked at the numbers. Like you said, you haven't looked at the numbers either, but you've been able to stay in the top high percentage of realtors right. in Lafayette. And you're in an area that your average sales price is much lower than
absolutely.
A lot of communities. So talk about how it is to operate in a small community.
So I actually, that helped me build my business. So when I first started at the other brokerage, every team meeting, they would laugh at me. Because I was selling $40,000-$50,000 homes. And actually, when I left that brokerage, I was number one out of about 450 agents.
Wow.
So my thought process was, okay, I don't have $1 million listing, but I can get $1 million worth of listings to sell. They may be $60,000, $80,000, but if I get enough of them, I'm going to be in the same place. So small towns are neglected areas. Nobody wants to go in a small town. Days on the market are long. There's not as many buyers. People are not looking to move. So first thing I did was move into my hometown. I moved into my hometown because they had some realtors that weren't in the MLS, would just stick a sign in the yard, and that was it. My old mom used to say that I made them work, and I made them join the MLS. So, and her old people thought I was running for police juror or something because my signs were everywhere.
Right.
So once I dominated my hometown, then it was just a gradual move into St. Landry Parish is where I live. I've been there 45 years. So I was going between Evangeline and St. Landry Parish primarily. But even in St. Landry, you know, back then our average sale price was probably $150,000.
Wow.
We just had to do volume.
Yeah.
And that's my mindset, is that I may not have, you know, $500,000-$800,000 houses, but I sure can drum it up by doing some $250,000 houses and just getting four of them.
Yeah.
So I don't even look at a price point. I mean, I actually sold two houses, $5,000 each. Yeah, true story. But these $40,000 sellers need an agent just like a $400,000 seller.
Right.
And my thought was, I don't want to leave them out without having representation and stuff because I'm greedy or because I'm too good for this. I'm never too good for anything. People will call me and say, hey, do you mind selling a $20,000 lot? No. Look, it's more money than I had before I started.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, my listing prices, if you look at my listings, I mean, they go from 11,000, you know, to right at a million.
Yeah.
So I don't turn work down.
Nice. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's great advice for a small town, because I do think that a lot of these small towns are very underrepresented.
Absolutely.
And if you're in a small community and you're listening to this podcast, know that you can go all in and you can have a lot of success in your small town and be everything to that small community.
That's where you build your reputation. And I'm going to tell you, people can do luxury all they want. My referrals come from my $150,000 and $200,000 houses and below. These people send me massive amounts of referrals because they're so happy that somebody took time and dealt with them on their level at their price range that they've never been treated like that before. You know, I have the same respect for somebody who's buying a $10,000 house as I do for a $1 million house, honestly.
Yeah.
I don't differentiate in price range or anything like that. And I think that's really important, is to respect all levels of buyers. And I think all levels of buyers need representation.
Yeah. I love that. That's awesome. That's great advice for sure. So look, we're getting a little bit short on time, but I want to kind of, the whole goal of the podcast is of course to help agents grow their business. But I'm going to ask you kind of the question that I ask most agents on the podcast. And that's, for 2024, we're in a year that a lot of agents are struggling right now. And a lot of them are saying, is this even for me? And they're looking for guidance, and they're looking for leadership, and they're looking for podcasts like this to tell them, give them a little encouragement on what you would do. So the question is if I'm a new agent and if I'm struggling, what advice would you give me?
Well, probably I'd first sit you down and say, is this really what you want to do? Are you willing to put the work in? Because if you're not, then get out, go find another job. If you're willing to sacrifice your time and to put the work in and show up every day and do what's necessary, pick up the phones, make the calls, find a mentor, find someone. We are always open. I love mentoring people. We are always open for mentorship. If somebody wants to come shadow me, I have high school students that'll come shadow me for a day. Put yourself with a producer. Put yourself in their space. Learn from them. Come in the office. Listen to the phone conversations. If you really want to do this, you can do it. There's plenty business. There's plenty money out there. But the clients are not going to go knock on your door. Okay? It's just like finding a boyfriend or a girlfriend. They're not coming to knock on your door. You have to put yourself out there.
That's great advice. I say the same thing. I love it. Yeah, I mean, definitely got to show up. Got to put in the work. Got to make those calls. Got to be in front of those people.
Got to be willing to do the hard stuff that's not comfortable.
Yeah.
You really do. And I mean, just, you know, I have agents on my team that don't get on social media. I'm like, nobody knows you're an agent, because they'll forget tomorrow.
Yeah.
I've been an agent for 13 years. If I'm not upfront, nobody's going to remember me in 6 months.
Yeah, that's great advice. I love the whole thing. I love your work ethic. I love it. You know, you and I are friends because we're both grinders. We go to work every day. We're at the office. We're putting in work. We're building the client base. We're building our team. And yeah, that's huge. So I really, really appreciate you sitting down with me and chatting. Thank you so much for driving in from Ville Platte to come.
Well, Opelousas, so Opelousas, not as far.
Not as far, but you know, same thing.
Yeah,
but
from the north.
Still a little bit of a drive, but it's all good. Well, I appreciate you spending a little time with us this afternoon.
Thanks for having me. Hopefully these agents are listening. This is the best career that I could ever imagine. And if you just throw it away, then I don't understand it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. But you got to go all in.
That's it. It's all in or nothing.
Absolutely. So look, guys, thank you guys so much for listening to the podcast. We really appreciate you. Give us a like, give us a share, give us a favorable review. We're just trying to bring a ton of value to realtors in our community and across the United States. So I hope that you guys are enjoying it. And if we can ever help you, please reach out. I know Lana would be open to a phone call or a text, or find her on social media. We'll post her information. So I hope that you guys have an amazing day.